Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
Okay, my name is James E. Roberts. I live in Independence, Missouri now. At the time I entered military service, I lived in the Mills part of Kansas City, Missouri. 1036, no, that's not right. 11803 Lawndale, which was just west of 71 Highway. I brought my DD-214.
Oh, great.
And it explains most everything that's going on. I enlisted on 1 November 1966, and I was discharged on 31 October 1969.
Okay.
I took basic training at Fort Leonard Wood, an AIT, Advanced Individual Training at Fort Leonard Wood, and then I was deployed to Korea. I arrived there in April of 1967, I guess, and it was kind of weird. I had to go for a job interview, which I never heard of such things in the military before. They sent me to what was called Yongsan, which is the military headquarters for the 8th Army in Seoul, Korea. And I went to the Adjutant General's office and I was told that I had a position there, that I qualified for a position there, I guess. And they sent me back to the replacement station at Kempo Air Force Base. And picked up my gear, and then I moved back to Yongsan. The one incident that was kind of strange was I was sent chaperoned by a Sergeant E6, and he had been in the Army for quite a while. And he also went for a job interview. On the way back, I noticed that he was upset. He got turned down for whatever job he was qualified for.
Okay.
And was told he was going to the 2nd Infantry Division, which was on the DMZ, the Demilitarized Zone.
Okay.
And this was kind of a shock to me, but I didn't know what was going on. Just too naive to really know the ways of the military at that time. I worked in the Adjutant General's office. I was a records clerk. I specialized in officer records. I took care of 375 officer records, which was
wow.
All the officers in the headquarters command. Most of them were majors and above. I think we had one second lieutenant, one captain, and everybody else outranked them.
Okay.
And this was just something I had to learn. I was supposed to type and didn't know how to type very well.
Oh,
so
really?
So they sent me to typing school there in Yongsan. And I got to know a sergeant major who worked in the office next door. And he and I would walk back from class every night. And that paid off in the long run, later on down the road. The sergeant major was a pretty nice guy. He kind of looked out for me. Later, when it came time to get promoted to Spec 5, which is the highest rank we could achieve over there, he came over and suggested to my sergeant that he get busy and get the paperwork in because he had failed to do it the month before. And I was one of the last of the groups that got promoted in 1967, I guess, there was 1,500 of us got promoted on the same day.
Oh, wow.
And most of us were in the headquarters company. And Yongsong was in the middle of Seoul, Korea, which I didn't realize the first couple months I was there because I never went outside the gates.
Okay.
Never had a reason. I was working every day or going to school every night.
So you were mostly just on the base?
On the base, okay. Yes. And later on I got to know what's called a KATUSA, Korean Augmentation to the United States Army. That's what that stands for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a Korean that's, he's in the Korean military, and he is assigned to the Army to support us. And he was living in the same barracks that I was. I got to go to his house, which was up fairly close to the presidential palace. The only things I remember about it was it had a wall around it and had barbed wire across the top.
Oh, wow.
And his family was very nice. That was the only time I'd ever been out anywhere with a Korean. And a lot of the guys went into the ville or village, and I never got involved in that type of nightlife. I did go out there one time and then decided that wasn't for me. A lot of the guys in the barracks went out there, spent a lot of time out there. A lot of them got involved with the local ladies.
Oh, yeah.
And I was there till I think April, May of 1968. The major incidents that occurred there was in April when I first got there. Within the first couple of days, the North Koreans shelled one of our barracks up along the DMZ. Sporadic fighting or shooting across the DMZ occurred most of the time. There was an incident where, this is based on newspaper accounts, I wasn't there.
Okay.
There was 50 North Koreans came marching in South Korean uniforms towards the presidential palace and just happened to get stopped by a South Korean who realized that they were the other side.
Oh.
And a shootout occurred in Seoul, and all but about 10 of these guys got killed. A few of them escaped. What I thought was really strange was they didn't even bother to wake us up to let us know that there was a firefight going on.
So that was downtown. Going on and you were sleeping?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Communication wasn't that great in those days. Nobody had a cell phone, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, there was the Pueblo crisis, where the USS Pueblo was captured off the coast of North Korea and taken into Wonsan Harbor. It looked like we were getting ready to go to war, because the biggest thing that I heard was that we were having to restrain the South Koreans, because they were anxious to go across the DMZ going north.
Okay.
And the it looked like we were going to get stuck in Korea for a long time, because they put us on 24-hour day duties. I was, I think, a Spec 4 at the time. The guy they put in charge was a brand new Spec 5 that had just arrived in Korea like a couple days before.
Wow.
And
so when you say day duties, what does that include? Is that separate from your record keeping job that you had?
Well, I had to be at my desk. Mm-hmm. I worked the midnight shift, started working the midnight shift. We had to have somebody there 24 hours a day.
Okay.
And so that's what started, and I did that for a week or two. We also got issued our steel helmets and gas masks that we had to carry around with us all the time.
Wow, even in the office?
Even in the office.
Wow.
Well, we're only 30 miles from the DMZ. That's
okay.
Part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But Pueblo crisis was probably the most important thing that happened during my tour. I received the Armed Forces Expeditionary Medal for that, and that later on pays dividends.
Mm-hmm.
at the end of my tour in Korea, I got reassigned to Kansas City to the Armed Forces Entrance Examination Station,
okay.
which basically I called Fort Home because I got to live at my parents' house.
Oh, great.
And didn't have a lot of expenses that other people had.
So what year was that that you were transferred to Kansas City?
In 68 in May.
Okay.
And probably took my duties up in June.
Okay.
Because I had 30-day leave in between. When I first started at Armed Forces Entrance Examination Station, we were processing probably 50 inductees a day. By the time I left at the end of October of 1969, we were processing 200 to 300 inductees per day.
Wow. Why the increase?
The Vietnam War.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
To get people in, you have to have people coming in to replace the troops that are going overseas or replacements overall.
Yes.
And because the enlistments were 2 years for draftees, also called USs, 3 years for regular Army, I don't know what National Guard was, but the Marine Corps was 4 years.
Okay.
But there were some two-year Marine Corps that were drafted as USs and then converted to Marines. And that happened usually at the induction station. My job there was a 71HB testing specialist. I would give the orientation, or part of the orientation, in the mornings for the group when they first came in, get them all settled in, decide how many we had to process. We were given instructions that if we could get it done early, we could leave early. So that was always a goal.
Okay.
Though it didn't ever work mm-hmm. very often, because it's too easy when you're dealing with a large group to have something happen that slows the entire group down.
Okay.
One of the things that happened was we had a person that would come in and give basically a program that would say, okay, I need to have all of your arrest records. You know, if you've been arrested, you need to write that down on your form.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he would take an hour and a half to 2 hours to do that.
Wow.
Well, that's a good portion of an 8-hour day.
Right.
So we eventually suggested to him that he quit giving it. We'd heard enough times we could give it, so we started giving it, but what we did was we put two or three more people in the room to help those people that were having problems rather than stopping the whole group and figure out whatever this person had that was wrong and listen to his story. Well, then we eliminated most of the time and only took maybe a half hour to 45 minutes to do it, instead of all this other time. So that's the kind of things that we work for, was try to iron out these bottlenecks that mm-hmm. occurred. And because after they got through taking their testing batteries, then we would send them over to the medics, and the medics would look at them and figure out whether they were qualified A1 or whatever.
Okay. So you guys were doing, you said, the entrance exam. So if someone, was this for people that were enlisting or that were drafted or both?
This was both.
Okay.
Initially, when we first started, we would get a group of people, and part of them would just be coming in under the selective service to see if they qualified, put into one of the categories. A1 okay. being you're physically fit, mentally fit, you can go on. Then you had categories 2, 3, and 4. And 4 was at the bottom, and there was actually a category 5 by the time we got through. But if you were category 5, you were low in education, didn't score well on any of the tests, whether you wanted to or not. We had a few people deliberately tried to flunk, but that
I was gonna say,
doesn't work
either. during that time, did you see, were most people hoping to be an A1, or were they hoping to be?
Well, I think even before I went in, I had a college deferment But my grades weren't high enough to keep me going. So at the end of about 2.5 years, I said, I better enlist. That way I get to maybe select what I want to do. I don't know how that worked out, really. But
didn't sound too bad.
Yeah, but I was lucky. I mean, at this same time, they're filling lots of people to go to Vietnam. I came down on what they call levies twice while I was at Aviz. But the Army system worked for me because I didn't have enough time left to fill a year rotation in Vietnam by the time the levies came down. But towards the end, it was looking like they were going to take anybody and everybody, regardless of how long they had left.
Right.
So.
Did you end up being able to stay in Kansas City, or did you have to...
No, I stayed the entire service while I was at APHIS in Kansas City. And I was discharged up at Fort Leavenworth on 31 October 1969.
And how old were you when you were working at Kansas City?
Let's see. That was 22, 23.
So you were 23 and you were doing the entrance exams for, I'm assuming most people coming in were fairly young.
Well,
or did you see kind of
towards the end, it got to be they were higher ages because there was more people losing their college deferments.
Okay.
So they were maybe 19, 20, 21, 22. Mm-hmm. And some were even older than that. We did have a few incidents where we had a gentleman come in and he took the AQB testing battery, Army Qualification Battery. And he scored high on two sections and zero on the other two sections. Well, the average ended up putting him into a category 4. Well, in reviewing his paperwork, we discovered that he had no education. He was, according to a judge, a moron.
Oh.
And he should not have been qualified. But we determined that because he worked in a shop that did blueprints, that the section that he scored high on was identifying boxes and how they went together. Mm-hmm. So his skill level for that was higher than some other people.
Okay.
But he shouldn't have been qualified, so we turned him over to the medics and they disqualified him.
Okay. And you said you saw some people come in and deliberately try to flunk out?
Well,
how did that...
we had people that binged on donuts to get their weight up.
Oh.
Because they wanted to be, I don't know, too heavy to go in. But military don't look at you that way. That's just somebody we can train harder.
yeah. Work those donuts off.
Yeah. And we had some other people that deliberately didn't want to take the tests and scored low. But that didn't necessarily mean they were disqualified.
Okay. And you said when you were working in Kansas City, you were living with your parents, so you weren't living at the base?
No.
Okay.
No. There's no base for AVs.
Oh, sorry. I don't know how some of that works.
I guess you could have stayed at Fort Leavenworth and driven back and forth or something like that. But
okay.
There wasn't any formal base. We got a housing allowance. I don't remember how much it was. It wasn't a whole lot back in those days because I think we were still only making maybe $150, $200 a month.
Right.
Something like that. I stayed with my folks till I got married and I was about... August of 1968, and then my daughter was born in the 15th of October 1969, but the government paid for it.
Oh, great.
And that's about how, what was going on.
Okay.
We moved to Ruskin Apartments, and then later the President Gardens on 81st and Troost, and then later Gate House, which was back out south.
Okay.
About Longview and Blue Ridge. We were there when the little tornado came down the street, hit some of the buildings over along Blue Ridge. I was in the 1957 tornado. House got hit. We were in the basement. Some neighbors died next door.
Okay. So what was it like just, you know, being in the military during, sounds like you were, you know, came in during Korea, and you were also, I mean, in the military during Vietnam.
Korea was just a separate thing. It was not a war or anything going on over there. It was just a duty station.
Okay.
The other people, when I came out of AIT, went to Germany for the most part. We just had a few people that went to, like, basic infantry training.
Okay.
Most of us were clerks, is what it amounts to. It was my first occasion to run across women in a military.
Okay.
There was a couple of, two or three ladies in my AIT class. Only reason I remember them, I think they all three had red hair.
Oh, really?
And just weird little things like that
that you remember.
Because you don't, military, you don't really think about women in the military, and that was the first occasion I ran across women in the military. Had a pretty uneventful.
Yeah, sorry.
For the most part.
But, you know, what was it like serving, even being in Kansas City, you know, during the Vietnam conflict? I've talked to people that were, you know, over there, over here, and just kind of, there was a sort of feeling about the military at that time. Did you get any of that?
I didn't experience any of that. No. And it's kind of weird because I watched Ken Burns' thing here this last week.
Yeah.
For the 1966, 68, that kind of thing, I kind of looked at what was going on there and what I was doing. I'm thinking I must have been oblivious to most of this stuff.
Yeah.
Because, let's see, starting in June of 68 when I came back, I also went to work in my off time back with Commonwealth Theaters. I had worked at the Crest Theater in South Kansas City before
going
in the military and went back as an assistant manager. I don't know how I managed to stay up till 12, 1 o'clock at night and get back up at 4 o'clock in the morning so I can be at work by about 5 with AFI. So I did that for, well, the rest of my tour. And then later I went from the Crest over to the Metcalf Theater, and then later, because I was 21 or 22, they sent me to the Brookside Theater because they were playing Midnight Cowboy, and they couldn't have anybody under 21 there running the theater because of the X-rated movie. Or I guess it was X at the time.
So it sounds like you stayed busy.
Yeah, pretty busy.
Did you know anybody at the time that did get sent over to Vietnam?
There was a guy in our basic training named, I think it was Kniper, and he got mad and volunteered to go.
Oh, wow.
Which was kind of strange to react that way, but he's the only one that actually volunteered out of the group. Everybody else was selected to go to the different places.
Okay. Are you, you know, currently now actively involved in any military groups or?
No.
Okay.
No. I spent 28 years with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers after I.
Oh, okay.
I spent a number of years with 7-Eleven from 70 to 79, and then I was with Venture Stores for about 4 years. Not quite, I guess 2 years. And then from 1984 to 2012, I was with the Corps of Engineers.
Gotcha. What did you do there?
Logistics Management Specialist. I was also the Chief of Logistics for about a year.
Okay.
Here in Kansas City, 601 East 12th Street.
So you've had a lot of jobs.
Not really.
Sort of. Is there anything else you would like to talk about in regard to your, you know, military experiences or your time serving?
Not really, other than I have two brothers. One of them was a draftee, a U.S.
Okay.
And the other one was enlisted. All of us were in during the Vietnam War time period.
Oh, wow.
However, one brother went to Alaska and spent a tour and a half there, I think. And then my other brother was on order. He was worked in armor, a tanker. He trained at Fort Knox, Kentucky.
Okay.
Which is where all my relatives are located.
Oh, okay.
That aren't in Missouri. So he was able to visit with the relatives and whatnot. Then he got orders to go to Vietnam. So they loaded him on a plane, sent him out to California. He got to California, kept getting new orders, and then he was eventually sent to Hawaii, where he spent the rest of his tour duty.
Wow. So you had one brother in Kansas City, one in Alaska, and one in Vietnam, and then in Hawaii.
We weren't all at the same time.
Okay. Very interesting.
But we did luck out in the sense we didn't have to go.
Yeah.
But it was always something you dreaded, because like I say, it came down to levees. Mm-hmm. They were all the time up in the amount of people that need to go in.
Yeah. So were you anxious during that time that you were going to have to go?
Oh, yeah. And every time you came down a levee, you were concerned. And then because of the way the Army works, you weren't qualified to go. Because you didn't have the time left.
Okay.
And that kind of thing. So that's an anxious time, and your wife would get anxious, and you would be anxious.
I can imagine.
All kinds of things like that. And you have, you know, other people that you're dealing with that I have a brother-in-law who spent a tour in Vietnam, and then spent a tour in Korea, in Germany.
Oh.
I think he was a Marine, so he had a year in Vietnam, and then he had a year or year and a half, 18 months, whatever the tour in Germany was.
Okay. Well, I mean, if you don't have any other, you know, stories you want to share, I do appreciate you coming in and talking to me today, and we appreciate your, thank you for your service.
Well, I think one of the things that comes out is those of us who are Vietnam era but not Vietnam veterans, I think sometimes we feel lucky, I'm sure, but we also feel a little guilty because we didn't go.
Right.
And we also don't get the recognition that even the Vietnam people get.
I understand. but it sounds like, I mean, you know, you were still doing what you were asked
right.
to do, and, you know, that's still an important job, and I can understand.
How I progressed in the military service, I got an E5, which is pretty high rank. It's like a sergeant.
Yeah.
And that's pretty good. My dad was a tech sergeant in World War II.
Oh, wow.
And but he was in a lot longer than I was.
Yeah. So it sounds like you guys kind of have a lot of military service in your family.
Yes. And besides the military, we have government service. My mother and most of her sisters and her mother all worked at Oak Ridge.
Okay.
Building the atomic bomb, or working on,
wow.
working there. I don't say they built it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They all worked there at one time or another.
In the factory, or?
I don't know. They were probably office workers.
Somewhere. Okay.
My grandfather was a carpenter. He built buildings there.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother, I think she worked there at least for a little while. My mother worked there for at least a couple of years, I think. And then all of her sisters, she had two or three sisters that worked there. So the whole family was involved.
Yeah,
in
that time.
And then later,
really interesting.
After I'd been with the Corps of Engineers for a long time, I got some papers that my mother gave me and discovered that my dad worked for the Corps of Engineers after he came back from the military after World War II.
Wow.
He was assigned, the Corps of Engineers was in charge of Oak Ridge at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, when the Department of Defense was, or Department of Energy was created, then they switched over. So he switched over to Department of Energy.
Okay.
And he later worked as a guard at Bendix here in Kansas City and rose to the rank of lieutenant.
Wow.
So he had a good career. My wife worked for IRS. My mother went to work for IRS. I think my sister worked for IRS for a little while. She works for a county in near Knoxville, Tennessee now.
Okay.
So there's government service is something yes, that we got involved in.
Government, military, family.
Even though when I came out of the military service, I didn't want to have anything to do with the government.
Really? But it did end up that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, I think that was all the questions that
okay.
I had. So
okay.
I will give you back your DD2, and thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.
I don't know if I ever said that the date at the beginning, but today is just for posterity, September. It's October 2nd, 2017, and we're at the Midwest Genealogy Center.
Right.
All right.